This week on the Special Ed Strategist.
What was going on? And I was insecure as a new teacher, and I thought these kids were sabotaging my program on purpose, or I don't know what I thought, but I did. I couldn't get it. Where was their joy? So that's over responsivity, and it can be in all the senses. You can have a vestibular over responsivity where you will never get on a swing, and they need a lot of practice, assurances that we understand how hard they're trying. So we had a 10-minute screening program. We asked children if they could stand on one foot for 10 seconds, if they could tell us where we were touching them when we came up behind them with a soft pencil eraser and tapped them on the cheek, where we came behind them so they couldn't see, and we would tap them lightly, like just a flick. Very satisfying to get that lint off the ground, and it's that push and pull of the vacuum cleaner. They loved it. They brushed the dog, they walked the dog until the dog got bigger than them, and then they didn't. Let's not make life easy. Let's not push the button and have the garage door open all by itself. Let's have the kids open the garage door. Really, remember, nature designed us to work.
Hello and welcome to the Special Ed Strategist podcast. I am your host, Wendy Taylor. I am very excited about our conversation today with Carol Kranowitz, and she is the guru of the out of sync child. I'm going to have her introduce herself, but I hope all of you are going to grab a cup of coffee, sit down with a pen and some paper, and take some furious notes so that we can support our students and our personal children that we care about so dearly. So welcome to the show, Carol. Thank you.
Oh, Wendy, I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you. So just tell us a little bit about who you are and what you love to do and all the magic that you make happen for families.
Oh, thank you. I am a retired preschool teacher. I taught for 25 years at an independent preschool in Washington, D.C. called St. Columba's Nursery School. I was totally green when I started. I had no education in education. I thought all children liked to play in the mud and bang rhythm sticks together and swing. And was surprised when I got to this school and found that there were children whose feet never left the ground, who refused to take off their shoes and socks on barefoot day, who would approach the basket of rhythm band instruments not to poke around and select a triangle, but to upturn the basket and walk through the tambourines and jingle bells and woodblock. What was going on? And I was insecure as a new teacher, and I thought these kids were sabotaging my program on purpose, or I don't know what I thought, but I did. I couldn't get it. Where was their joy? Where was their comfort and their yearning for learning? I couldn't figure out what was going on. 10 years passed. I asked tons of questions. Nobody knew. This was in the 70s and the early 80s. And then a pediatric therapist who's retired now, but was very active here in Washington, the Washington area, Lynn Balzer-Martin, came to our school, did a workshop on what was then known as sensory integration dysfunction. And it put all the pieces together for me. I implored her to teach me, give me books, give me things to read. She said, there isn't anything for you to read. Here's a stack of my assessments. I've got permission from my other OT friends to let you look at their assessments with the names of the children redacted. And Wendy, they were impenetrable. Sensory integration or sensory processing is really hard to explain. And that's why there wasn't anything for people who were just starting at the beginning. So I started to write a glossary for myself. What does vestibular mean? What does co-contraction mean? What does neurological response mean? I didn't know any of it. And then I began to write little stories. And so the stories evolved and it became a book. So the out-of-sync child is about 25 years old now, sold maybe 1.5 million copies and translated into 16 languages. And that's my story. So I'm not a therapist. I am a curious, compassionate preschool teacher, retired. Do our listeners want a definition of what sensory processing is?
Yeah, so I was going to ask you real quick, just kind of before, to set the stage for us, and you do have several other follow-up books for the out-of-sync child that we'll list in our show notes that can help guide folks as a reference. And really, you're just the spearheading of that curiosity of how to have the kiddos that you were supporting in your classroom enjoy what they were doing has led to all of this knowledge for us. So yes, if you could just go ahead and just give us the fundamentals of what does it mean for a child to be out of sync? And then how, just to help us unpack kind of what that sensory processing challenges are and how they may show up in different kiddos. And then from there, we can really dive into what are some creative ways that we can support it once we recognize it.
Great. Okay. All right. So nature has designed us to learn from sensory messages that we're getting from our bodies and from our environment that primarily help us survive. That's the first job of sensory processing. And I use the term sensory processing. It is sometimes interchanged with sensory integration, but processing is a little easier to get. So we are born to know that if we're too close to the fire, we back up. If we're about to fall, we brace ourselves. We throw out a leg or an arm to catch ourselves, to protect our mostly our heads from impact. Nature has designed us to move, not just frequently, but almost constantly, except when we're sleeping, because life has requirements where we need to be very, very active to not only protect ourselves from harm, but proactively to go out and gather firewood and berries and build stone chimneys and catch fish and do what we need to do to survive. So when we are taking in sensations through our 8 sensory systems, which I will mention in a moment, this information comes into our nervous system, our spine, our brainstem, our brain. Our brain quickly examines these sensations, associates them with other sensations, and says, this is what you need to do next. Sensory processing disorder, or what I prefer these days calling sensory processing differences, happens when that process is not smooth. The information comes in, there's nothing damaged or diseased about the receptors in our body. The information comes in, but somehow it gets garbled in the central nervous system. So the response is inaccurate or inefficient in some way. So we don't take our hand back from the fire fast enough. We don't stretch out a leg to protect us from falling, and we crash and we break our elbow. We don't understand that a classmate's foot touching ours under the table is not a primal threat. We don't get that. We think it's a primal threat. That's what happens when our processing is not smooth and efficient. So I mentioned 8 senses, and just to review, everybody knows about seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and touching. And all of those senses have receptors in the head. Touching also has receptors all over our body. The tactile or touch sense is our largest geographic sensory system. We have especially sensitive spots, not only in our head, but also in our hands, our feet, our hair, and our genitals. And we need to be very sensitive. Walking barefoot, as our great, great, great ancestors did, they needed to know when they were stepping on some sharp stones. They needed to know how to grab onto the bark, pull themselves up a tree. So the tactile system is very important. Okay, those are the 5 that people know about. The other three, one is the interoceptive system. This is the awareness or not so great awareness of our internal organs. We are aware of our bladder, for instance, and our stomach. We know when they're full or empty. Not so much about our gallbladder or our spleen. We don't know what they're doing, but they have to keep humming along. All organs have to be working smoothly for us to feel comfortable, able, and operating in full agency. Okay, a seventh sensory system is proprioception. This is the awareness of our muscles and joints. So when we stretch, we are activating our proprioceptors. So when we stretch and we flex and we stretch and we flex and we're getting input into our musculature. And when we see kids fidgeting in their classroom chairs, let's switch how we're looking, how we're perceiving that. That is not a child who's fidgeting and not paying attention. That is a child earnestly trying to pay attention. And the way to do it is to move his body and activate some of his proprioceptors so that he can get himself organized. So let me just stop for a second and have everybody put your hands on the arms or the seat of your chair and push yourselves up so that your butt is off the seat and hang up there in the sky in a minute for a minute and now come down. Okay, now do that again. Go all the way up. Okay, and come down. Good. All right. Now I would normally have you do that a few more times, but we'll move on. Only took a second. I don't know about you, but my wrists are tingling, my shoulders are tingling. If I had had the presence of mind to hold in my abs would be tingling. Okay, now that's all a kid needs every few minutes, just the permission or the invitation to move her body a little bit so she can pay attention. The eighth sense is the vestibular sense, and Dr. Jean Ayers was the occupational therapist who developed the theory of sensory integration or sensory processing back in the 1960s, 70s, 80s. And she developed techniques called the sensory integrative or sensory integration approach for how to help children who are not processing their sensations as smoothly as typical kids do. The vestibular sense is the master sense. That's what Dr. Ayers called it. This is the sense, the receptors are in our inner ear. They're like little carpenter's levels. And every time we tip our head, we are activating our vestibular sense. When we bend over to pick up our dropped pencil, when we lie back in mommy's arm to have her rinse our hair in the bathtub after a shampoo, when we swing, when we looby-loo or hokey-poke or ring around the rosy, when we do anything like that, we are making our vestibular system do its work. Most children are comfortable moving and balancing as they go through space. They can walk, they can run, they can climb, they can swing, they can jump on the trampoline, they can sway in a hammock. Some children are terrified of that kind of activity because their vestibular system is not making them comfortable with their body in space. Other children will be craving that kind of movement, which brings me to the next topic of the subtypes of sensory processing differences. And I don't know if you're ready. Wendy, here's my problem. You ask me a question and I want to give you an encyclopedia. So
I love this though. I love this. If I could just hold for a second, how does one identify sensory processing? And then that kind of can lead us, because I know you developed a childhood screening for sensory processing. Where would a parent start?
Okay, I suggest that we put on imaginary sensory goggles or sensory spectacles and put on these spectacles and ask yourself three questions. One of them is, What sensations seem to make my child behave in a way that doesn't look like other kids? Now, if you have one child, you have to go to the playground, or you have to get together with the nieces and the nephews, and I suggest that you do that. It's easier to see in a family situation. Put on your goggles, your spectacles, and say, is it touch that bothers my child? Is it that this kid is always complaining about the tags in his t-shirts, the lumps in his socks? Is he a picky eater? Is he very, very particular about not wanting to eat mashed potatoes if there's a lump in the mashed potatoes? Does he avoid crunchy peanut butter, rice? I knew a little kid who said, I don't eat dots. And that meant strawberries. He liked the flavor of strawberries, but insisted that his mother cut away the outside of strawberries and just give him the inside because of the dots. Okay, this takes a lot of time. This is also socially not that great because kids like this in the cafeteria who are, you know, the other kids are just eating and he's examining his food, not cool. Okay, so clothing issues, food, the sensation of food in the mouth, the nearness of other people. Does, with your sensory spectacles on, if you're thinking about touch, does your child jerk away dramatically and emotionally when another person touches him? Is this the kind of child that reminds you of a skittish horse that you mustn't approach from the back? You always have to have a wide berth to come way around so the child begins to see you in his peripheral vision and there's no surprise. Is that your child? So the tactile sense is pretty common in children with sensory processing differences. And they will be, the most common problem is called over-responsivity. So that means neurologically, the child's threshold for incoming information is very low. Touch sensations pour in like a flood over the threshold and the child cannot sort them out and it's all too much. And the result is the child's behavior is avoidance. I call this the sensory avoider. This is the child who has his arms crossed in front of him and he may be defiant. I hate art. I hate science. The preschooler will say with his back to the table that's filled with all these alluring art or science supplies. Well, a child doesn't hate art. The child is uncomfortable touching tempera paint or clay. Okay, over-responsivity means the child will avoid life, a lot of activities. Now, if I say to a parent, we see Charlie is really, really interested in the art and he stands and he looks at it and then he turns away from it and let's figure out a way we can bring him to the table here. Let's put the paint into a Ziploc plastic bag and he doesn't have to touch the paint, but he can still have the experience of poking it and mushing the red and the yellow together and getting orange. And the parent will say, well, I don't understand. He's always touching everything. How can you say he has a touch problem? Well, one answer is we need sensory information. And if we don't get it the typical way, which is feeling comfortable touching a lot of different media, we're going to get it by touching the things that are okay. Here's what's okay for the child with tactile over-responsivity. Mommy, maybe daddy, but maybe not daddy, or vice versa. I knew a child who preferred the daddy and the mommy was in tears. And mommy said, I touch him so gently and I put on extra perfume and I dance in front of him and he turns away. And this poor little kid was overwhelmed by mommy, not only by her gentle touch that he couldn't understand. He needed firm, deep touch. He needed daddy's big hug, not mommy's ticklish touch. He didn't need the perfume. He didn't need the visual stimulation. He needed the peacefulness that he got in daddy's arms. So, you know, if we look at how we're responding to our children's behavior, maybe if we made some changes ourselves, it would be more comfortable for our kids. So that's over-responsivity. And it can be in all the senses. You can have a vestibular over-responsivity where you will never get on a swing. You need your feet planted on the earth because that's where you're secure. Once your feet are off the earth, you are in outer space. That's a vestibular system for you. These are kids who cling to the banister, cling to the teacher or to the parent, do not feel the freedom and the joy in exploring the neighborhood or the playground or the playroom.
So what are some tricks to support that?
Gentle.
I should say activities, not tricks.
Yeah, tricks is fine. Sometimes it is a trick. Gentle introduction to touching things. Let's see. Soft things are good to start with, not prickly things. But you do want to introduce prickly things. Just really, really carefully. And gooky things. One activity that I have in my upcoming book called Good Times with Out of Sync Grandkids. The activity is called Worm Rescue. And my recommendation is you go out on a wet, rainy day and pick up a worm from the sidewalk and then put it back on the grass. Now, a lot of kids will really not like this. So I suggest that the grandparent or the adult reading the book put the worm in her own hand and invite the child to touch it. Okay, that's enough. That's enough. Just a little incremental beginning. So how can we bring tactile, over-responsive kids to the table? Make things gentle and encourage them to touch things. OTs will put desirable toys like little teddy bears or coins or buttons or something into a mound of shaving cream. And this shaving cream, it doesn't have a scent, so you're not overwhelming the child with an olfactory or smell issue, which may also be associated with sensory processing differences. And the child's job is to touch the shaving cream and pull out the toys. Or these toys can be embedded in Theraputty, which is like Play-Doh, and the child initially may not find that inviting, but in order to get to that pretty pink button, maybe she will play a little bit with it. So there, you know, there are things like that, inch by inch. And what happens as we introduce children to touching or to moving or smelling or other sensory jobs, the nervous system is responding positively and is making permanent connections. So it's in the brain, it's synapses, it's myelinization, it's stuff that I don't understand fully, but that's what OT is doing. It's helping the children make the operation in their head smoother and more permanent. To get kids who are over-responsive to vestibular sensations, to get them comfortable moving, I would say to parents, try you sit on the swing and have the child sit on your lap and just sit there with keep your feet still. That might be all the child can tolerate. Tomorrow, let your feet off the ground and let the swing just by virtue of your breathing, let the swing move a little bit. I'm talking incremental changes. And try a little more, a little more, a little more. There is no point in jollying kids along and saying, oh, look, Peter, your brother Peter can do it. What's wrong with you, Charlie? That doesn't help. But inch, inch by inch by inch. And then make it short, pleasant, compassionate. Because you know what? Little kids can't tell you. They can't say, mommy, my vestibular system is really screwed up. So you have to have your spectacles on to see what they're avoiding or what they're craving too. And a second question is, what experiences does the child go for naturally? What is the child's self-therapy? If you have a child who goes to the tire swing at the playground and swings so fast that he's a blur for half an hour, take a note of that, because that child is saying to you that he is not getting sufficient vestibular input just from life. He's really, really going for it, especially if he finally gets off that swing with that intense rotary movement. Rotary movement is much more intense than linear movement. Linear movement is a regular swing or jumping up and down on a trampoline or swaying side to side in a hammock. Rotary is very, very stimulating. All right, if your child gets off that tire swing and walks in a straight line and is not dizzy and is not throwing up, that is evidence that your child has a vestibular under responsivity. So look at what the child is doing. The child with tactile issues might be touching things that he is comfortable with. A blanket, he might be glued to his baby blanket and he's 5 years old and you have to send a piece of the remaining blanket tape ribbon in his pocket with him to go to school. He might be glued to his teddy bear. You know, there are things that are safe and he doesn't want to explore. He does not want a new teddy bear. He wants that teddy bear and he does not want it washed. He wants it to smell just the way it okay. So look at what children are seeking for comfort or to get them going. And a third question is, what do you do as the adult that surprisingly helps the child? The child doesn't seek himself, but you have found when you do it, it works. An example is getting in the car at 2 a.m. because the child can't sleep and driving. The movement in the car might be very soothing for the child. Does jumping, like if you get a trampoline, and you sit together with the child on the trampoline and you go up and down and up and down and the child jiggles too. And the child hadn't thought to do that herself. Look at her face. Is she enjoying it? Is it okay? I mean, that kind of thing. So think about things where the child is having a good moment and figure out what's the antecedent and what did you do? Is it something the child ate? Is it something the child didn't eat? Is this a day when the child did not have mac and cheese and grilled cheese and Cheetos for breakfast, lunch, and dinner? I mean, it could be that what you're looking at is a child has intolerance to certain foods, and cheese and dairy products are big culprits. A lot of kids with sensory issues also have sensitivities to what they eat. And gluten, the gluten in wheat, is also a biggie. Look at what they're eating and what they're not eating. And if what they're not eating is means they're having a better day, take note of it. And Wendy, I'm sorry, what did you
No, mean? This is great. I mean, I love the three questions, right? And thinking through as a parent. And I love the suggestion of starting some sort of kind of journal or something, whether it's digital or paper, so that you can start to think as a parent or as an adult as to what makes a good day, what doesn't, and then thinking through kind of what can we do differently. And I'd love to hear more suggestions. And then also, how do we start to bring in, if this child is a little older and they're transitioning into a preschool or elementary school, how do we start to collaborate with that classroom professional to help kind of bridge this home to community to school in the sensory realm?
Right. Okay. Let me just backtrack a little bit. I won't go into detail about the 8 subtypes of SPD, but I've only talked about 2. And I just briefly want to say there's over-responsivity. There's under-responsivity, where children are not getting the information from their bodies or from the environment. They don't know when they've eaten too much. They don't know when they have to poop. They don't know when they've been on the swing too long. They're not getting it. They're not hearing the teacher say, time to come in now. There are sensory cravers who are insatiable for certain kinds of sensory input. They might climb everything because they want that vestibular excitement. the bookcase is the next thing to climb up. They might be jiggling and wiggling and moving and bumping and crashing everywhere. Then there are kids who have poor sensory discrimination. They don't know the difference between hot and cold. Like they'll come inside from recess and not take off their coat. They just don't realize that the schoolroom is warm, and they'll get flushed and red. And so the teacher needs to say, Timmy, it's time to hang your coat up. Visual and auditory discrimination are also difficulties kids with SPD have, where they may not be able to see the differences between B and D, or P and Q, or 6 and 9. Those are just seeing the way the words and the letters and numbers are on the pages. It's confusing for them. Or they may not hear consonants very well. Some children with auditory discrimination issues do not discern the differences between sounds like b and d, or g and k. So they're trying to have conversations with their classmates, and the other kids don't know what they're talking about. So discrimination issues are a problem that arise when when auditory sensations are not coming in, or visual sensations are not coming in, and they're not integrating in the brain. We don't just see something, we make all kinds of associations with what we see. Like, when did I last see a pine cone? What did it feel like when I picked up a pine cone? How did my body move to bend over to pick up that pine cone? Can I replicate that? Can I do that again? And for kids with sensory issues, so many experiences are for the first time because they are not making those associations. You know, the child who's 8 years old and you get frustrated with her because she can't put on her seatbelt, and you want to say, how many darn times have we gone through this? Take a step back and realize that it's new every time. It needs rehearsal. This child needs a lot of practice. I know how frustrating it is. I know parents will put on the seatbelt of that 8-year-old just so that we can get to school and get to work. And so we need to give our kids the understanding that they're trying as hard as they can, and they need a lot of practice, assurances that we understand how hard they're trying. Okay, just a couple more subtypes. One is called postural challenges, and this is the kids who slump. This is the slumper, and you want to say, you know, lift your chin up, straighten your shoulders back, don't put your head on the table. Well, core strength is an issue. This is part because the vestibular, proprioceptive, and tactile systems are not really, really strongly working together, and so poor posture is the result. What you do for that is you have the child get off the couch and get off the electronic device, which is so comforting and easy, and you don't have to move very much. Get the child moving. A last kind of subtype is dyspraxia. And this is praxis is good. We all want praxis. That's a Greek word for action or doing. And there are three steps to praxis. One is ideation, coming up with an idea of something we want to do, like I want to bend over and pick up that pine cone. The second step in praxis is motor planning. How am I going to bend over and pick up that pine cone? And the third step is execution. I'm bending over, I'm picking up the pine cone. And there can be breakdowns all along the way. Many, many children with SPD, sensory processing differences, also known as sensory processing disorder when it is severe. Many of kids with SPD can't get past the first step of ideation. They haven't picked up pine cones very much. They don't think about picking up pine cones. If they do think of it, it may be really difficult to understand how to engage their system so that they can bend over, and then of course they can't do it. Kids who are dyspraxic, they're fumblers, sensory fumblers, and they are the kids who will say, I can't do it, even before trying. They'll give up. And they want the same old, same old. They tend to want the same simpler jigsaw puzzle, not the 1,000 piece one that their 10-year-old peers are finding interesting. They want the ones they have done before because it's daunting to do a new task. So, okay, that I think I'm getting to your question of what can parents do with teachers and how can we get the grown-ups involved together? Well, I've been on both sides of the table, and I remember the anxiety when one of my son's teacher wanted a chat with me about his speech articulation. And my little boy confessed to me that he didn't talk in class anymore because he said, "How would you feel if everything you said you had to repeat twice?" Okay, so anyway, I went in and he had a lisp. And so he had stopped talking in class. He wasn't contributing. And it worked out fine. It worked out fine. The teacher was great. She understood it. There was a speech and language therapist on staff at this elementary school. It was part of the program. This was Montgomery County, Maryland. And in those days, there was free therapy for kids. I don't know where it is now. I know that anxiety. Okay. So then when I was a teacher, I had compassion for the parents who I wanted to speak to. I was the music and movement teacher, but I was also helping the OT who had introduced our school to sensory processing. I was helping her develop a screening program for preschoolers. And at that time, there was nothing that could be done in 10 minutes. There was a test that Dr. Ayers had devised, but it took 2 days. It was hours and hours and hours to get children to do all the tasks that were required. So we had a 10-minute screening program. We asked children if they could stand on one foot for 10 seconds, if they could tell us where we were touching them when we came up behind them with a soft pencil eraser and tapped them on the cheek where we came behind them so they couldn't see. And we would tap them lightly, like just a flick. And what we expected was that children would say, "Oh, you touched me here." And we would note when a child would go, you know, and I'm sorry, we don't have a video, so people don't know what I'm doing. But we would expect children to comfortably tap the place where the pencil eraser had touched their cheek. And then we would take note of the child who would grind out that touch, that it was awful and horrible. So we had simple things. I would help screen these children, and then we would call in the parents of the kids who had difficulty standing on one foot and responding to where their skin had been touched with a pencil eraser and other things. And I would help them first see how great their kids are, and then say, "But we're noticing that there are activities that Timmy is avoiding. And we wonder if you're seeing this at home too. And we think that he would enjoy doing a lot more stuff. And we think we have a way to help him." So that was my way to introduce it. And of course, it was very difficult for some parents to hear this because they would say, "Well, he touches everything at home." And I would try to explain, "Well, I bet he's just touching a few things a lot, but not a lot of things." And well, yes, the parents would begin to see, well, yes, maybe that's true. If teachers can say what a wonderful child the child is, because every child is wonderful. And Wendy, I found as a teacher, there were children that were not really lovable. And I figured out what to do with them. I figured out how to pretend that I was in love with them. And their response, they were so grateful. They would look when I would say, "I'm so glad to see you. We need you." I remember one little boy would look around to see who I was talking to. No one ever said that to him.
Isn't that so important? It really is as an educator to, because you had said this earlier and it's so true, and I've said this before, is that, you know, kids don't wake up wanting to be a jerk. And so as an adult in their life, if we can figure out, again, back to just you being curious as a new educator in the classroom or being curious as a parent of the why, and it's hard, right? It's not easy. We do, you know, we're also human. But just to be able to kind of figure out what can we do as the adult to really connect with that kid. And it's not always easy, but when you do, the fruits of that labor are beautiful.
Absolutely. I would start pretending, and very soon I dropped the pretense because I did love this child. I would build obstacle courses. Well, I had a lot of roles at this preschool. I started as a playground teacher. Then I went into the classroom, quickly learned that I didn't like a lot of the art stuff. I didn't like that. I didn't like cooking. So I became the music and movement teacher for everybody. I had 90 students, not just 18. When I was on the playground all day, I built obstacle courses. And there was one little boy who drove me nuts because he would undo the obstacles. And, you know, I would say, excuse me, I just put that long board there. And he said, I've got a better idea. Well, it took me a week. It should have taken me a minute, but I wasn't that smart. I figured out he had great ideas, and he wanted the board to do something a little more challenging, and he wanted it to be a little tippy. He wanted a little seesaw. We collaborated. We got a low log, and we put this board on the log and made a very comfortable seesaw. And if a child fell off, the kid would fall into the grass, and it wasn't a big deal. And that was fine. I liked kids to fall because I feel it's important for children to learn how to fall so they can get up again. Anyway, this Matthew had a vision for an obstacle course that taught me so much. And I put that one into the Out of Sync Child Has Fun. It's called Matthew's Teeter Totter because he taught me so much. I want the grown-ups, I want them to understand that they're on the same team. They're both on the same side of the table. They both want this child to feel comfortable in his skin, comfortable in the classroom, participating in everything that's going on. The teacher wants that. If the parent wants it 100%, the teacher wants it 99.5%. Maybe the parent has a little edge, but the teacher wants her classroom running smoothly. And if she's an experienced teacher, she sees the promise in every child. And she sees that what I didn't see when I started teaching, I didn't see that yearning for learning, but an experienced teacher we'll see that in every child. Every child wants to learn. So find yourself on the same page with the parent, if you're a teacher. And then offer, maybe it's a confession for a parent. Maybe it feels like a confession to say, this is what I see at home. I see this behavior at home. But offer it. It may be embarrassing to say, my child is never still. My child wiggles and jiggles at the dining room table. I tuck him in at bed and he's out of bed a minute later roaming around. Tell the teacher that this is helpful for the teacher because the teacher can say it's just like that at school. Or this often happens, the teacher can say it is not like that at school at all. What's going on at school that's helping this child stay put, or what's happening at home that's better than my classroom can provide? Can I make it quieter in my classroom for this child? Can I bring him to the front row so he can see me better? I want parents to disclose things. There was a child I had who was very dyspraxic, very awkward, and we helped him a lot, but he was extremely clumsy. Well, the child had cerebral palsy and his mother refused to tell us. Now, we just would have changed our approach to this child instead of our approach, which was if we keep reminding him, he won't break the toys. It would have changed everything for us, but that parent was very proud and didn't want it divulged. So I think that we, you know, in this America that we have, where we're trying to be kinder to one another, Let's be open with one another too. Let's tell one another things that, let's inform one another with things that the other person needs to know at the risk that the other person will be really angry. That's what I hope. I like to go to a doctor who makes me feel like I have more than 15 minutes. And there's some doctors who manage to do it within 15 minutes, but they manage to make me feel like I have said my piece. And I just don't want there to be impatience. I don't want it to be an us them situation, or I understand I'm smart, they don't understand they're not smart. We're all smart and we're all trying the same thing, which is to make a child comfortable in his skin, in his community, in his peer group, and help him love the job of childhood.
Yeah. And that's such a beautiful way. And I usually end with just asking, you know, if you had a billboard for parents, what would it be and why? And I feel like you just put it together so eloquently, and just having that space and grace for our younger friends that we support, whether it's our personal kiddos or the kiddos that we support in professional settings. Is there anything that I did not know enough to ask that I should have asked? I feel like we've covered a lot, given some people a ground to start moving forward on, but I want to make sure that, is there anything I should have asked?
One big thing. Wendy, when you and I started talking about this podcast, I wanted to talk about fun. I would like parents to look at everything as if it's a toy. Look at a stick as a toy and a paper towel tube as a toy, and have fun. Lighten the moments as much as you can, because if you have a child with SPD disorder, where the D is for disorder and the child's sensory issues are really getting in his way, then life is serious business. And you as a parent are working hard to make the child comfortable and get through the day. And fun goes out the window sometimes. Bring fun back, because fun is the way to sensory processing. Instead of walking to the car, say to the child, can you get to the car a different way? Can you jump to the car? Can you go backwards to the car? Instead of raising your hand when I say, who wants ice cream? Raise your elbow. Get your kids, you know, using their bodies in different ways. Give them heavy work activities. This is a term occupational therapists use. Heavy work activities, instead of saying, oh, my child is dyspraxic and he's clumsy and he's tired and he slumps and he's just comfortable sitting on the couch with his cell phone. Give the kid heavy work activities. Give him the laundry basket to carry and the groceries to carry in from the car. You know, don't give him the glass bottles of jelly. Give him the potatoes, give him the plastic bottles of seltzer water or something. And if it drops, okay, it'll get seltzerier. But give kids work to do and say to them, I need you. I need you. You've helped. You've made this go so much faster because you've helped me. Also, kids think work is fun. I used to take the lint out of the dryer. It was clean. And I would put chunks of lint on the living room carpet and let my young elementary school and my preschoolers vacuum. Very satisfying to get that lint off the ground. And it's that push and pull of the vacuum cleaner. They loved it. They brushed the dog. They walked the dog until the dog got bigger than them. And then they didn't. Let's not make life easy. Let's not push the button and have the garage door open all by itself. Let's have the kids open the garage door. Really, remember, nature designed us to work. Nature did not design us to have everything smart around us doing our life for us. We've got to do it ourselves.
One of my favorite, or my kids' favorite, I have three boys, activities when they were little is, I might have gotten it from you, Carol, as a muffin tin. And I put shaving cream in each of the little things, and then we dyed it. So that was fun. And then I just threw them in the bathtub, and they were just paints. the walls of the bathtub, and they just thought it was amazing. And they just like got down to just naked, you know, as you would in the bathtub, and they painted all of it. And then they ended up painting each other and themselves. And they did this a lot. They're probably mortified that I'm sharing this, but they loved it. I would say that green did, we learned once quickly green dyed our grout, and that was a lot of extra work to get out. But other than that, I was like, any other color than green, and just the whole movement, and it was
Right.
a lot of fun for them.
Right. Brushes, paintbrushes are
Yeah.
great. Give your child a bucket of water and have him paint the fence, and just like Tom Sawyer knew that it was a lot of fun. But lighten up, have fun, look at things, and ask your child, what can you do with a paper towel roll? What can you do with a string? Show me what you can do with this little piece of rope. And you may be surprised that in the beginning, a child who has sensory processing issues will not have a lot of ideas because he hasn't done a lot of these things. Keep putting them right there and saying, look what I can do with a paper towel tube. I can drop a penny down it. And forget the battery run toys, forget the electronic toys. Really see if you can go longer and longer periods without the electronics. Spend as much time outdoors as possible. I should say this every other sentence should be go outdoors. That's where the sensations are.
We also did, it was snowing here for people that can't see. And it just, I think, is what I'm thinking of. What did we do with three little boys when it was snowing? And I went to Home Depot and got a long piece of PVC pipe that basically ran down my stairs. And so we took zip ties and zip tied it to the handrail of the stairs. And the kids would take their little cars, the Matchbox cars, zip them down, and then they'd run down the stairs and run back up. And I think that stayed up in our house for probably a year. They just loved it.
That is so fun. And another idea is to get a length of gutter at Home Depot, like 12 feet of gutter, and put it out on so that it slopes on the outside, and then give the kids balls and cars and things, and get two gutters, and then you can have races, and all kinds of things can go down that gutter. That's another activity in the Out of Sync Child Has Fun. Here's one more thing. Oh, well, Wendy, gosh, this requires a whole another podcast because I have tons of activities to share. But this is it's a bicycle inner tube. You go to the bike store, and these are in the trash. They're happy to give them to some crazy person who comes in and wants old bicycle inner tubes. And you cut out the valve because that can be irritating. And then have the child step on, put his feet on it, and then stretch up. Make a triangle out of it. Make a square inside the tube. Older kids will say, wait a minute, I think I can do a hexagon. I've even seen a child try to do an octagon inside with elbows and knees, and I don't think he actually got to the octagon, but he was into it. He was really enjoying it, and at the same time getting this fabulous physical input from the resistive quality of this rubber, this stretchy rubber. Resistive activities. Think push, pull, lift, and carry. Think heavy work activities. Think resistive pushing. You can get bands from the physical therapy department at Target or something, and have the kids pulling on these things. They should have one in their backpack so that at school, when they're fidgety and they need to move, if they can't, the teacher's strict, maybe she will let them at least put their foot on a TheraBand and pull it with their hands to get some input. I am going to stop talking because I have written books on activities and things parents and teachers can do, and I love to talk about it. I love to demonstrate it. But right now, what is so important is to put on those sensory spectacles if you're new to sensory processing challenges, and look at your kids and see if you think there are some sensory issues, and the help for it is occupational therapy using sensory integration techniques, and you will see wonderful things happen.
This has been such a treat, and we will list all of your resources. I feel like, yes, we could do a whole other podcast of just what to do. So I'm hoping that folks will at least start here, start the conversation, start thinking about it, check out your resources, and use your wise sage wisdom of just make it fun.
Thank you, Wendy.
Make it fun.
Thank you.
So I appreciate your time today, and thank you so much.
It was great.
Thanks for tuning in to the Special Ed Strategist. Remember, the right support can make all the difference. As your dedicated Special Ed Strategist, I'm here to guide, collaborate, and empower your kiddo's success. Keep igniting potential one step at a time. Until next time, take care and keep strategizing. Today's episode is brought to you by Learning Essentials and our Cracking the Code to Special Education Eligibility course. Empower your advocacy, erase confusion, and unlock the services your kiddo deserves. Learn more at learningessentialsedu.com.